Hello, and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Just the two of us today?
Yes.
It's fine.
The way it always was. The way it always has been, the way it will be forever. Just me and Andrew.
Two microphones.
Two mics. That's it.
So today was a very, very big week in AI, and Google announced Gemini, which we talked about on these microphones a week ago.
You friends got to listen to this bold and, as we found out, accurate prediction, because what did you say 7 days ago, Mr. Main?
So rumor had come out that Gemini, the Google's next state-of-the-art model, was postponed. Rumor had been that they had postponed the release. They were going to try to release this by the end of the year. By release, make it generally available for people to actually use. And I had said, Sundar, the CEO of Google, is going to show something. He feels like he has to show something because the pressure. Back when ChatGPT came out, there was pressure on him. Hey, what is Google doing? Then GPT-4 came out. GPT-4 is just state-of-the-art across so many different areas. They had to say, what are you going to do? So there was this pressure, and they had a model they're working on, which is Palm 2, which is a sequel to Palm, which is a very good model. Palm 2 is a very useful model, which now powers Bard. But they were saying, well, Palm 2, this is going to be a GPT-4 killer. This is going to be GPT-4. It's going to do all these capabilities. By the time Palm 2 comes out, it turns out, no, it's not GPT-4 class. It's not there. They'd added in some capabilities of like video and stuff, images. And we got to clarify that later on. And GPT-4 had, in the demo, was able to do images and stuff, as we showed. And again, caveat, up until 2 months ago, I worked at OpenAI. I worked on the release of GPT-4. I produced the videos for that. I worked on, you know, capabilities, putting together the landing page, all this stuff with other people, of course, all that. But
yes,
I was the lead. But I was the lead for, hey, let's go showcase what this stuff can do. So I'm going to be incredibly biased here. So I'm obviously going to be biased. I have sort of my own insider perspective. But having been a person that was inside saying, OK, how are we going to position this, show capabilities, et cetera, I understand how it's made. I also understand the difference between OpenAI and other companies when it comes to this. So, I hear about stuff, and I'm also in the paper for GPT-4 because I worked on capabilities. Like, what can this thing actually do? So that makes it a fun job to both be able to work with the stuff, play with it, and then be part of figuring out how we tell people what it can do. Palm 2 comes out. As I said, Palm 2 is not as capable as we thought, whatever. But then there was a bit of a blowback because Google was trying to show, they had videos, they show a video of, hey, look at Palm do anything. And they had a thing that with tweet with a demonstration, and it showed it was hallucinating. And Google had been saying, well, we're the cautious ones. Hallucination's a problem, and we are taking the responsible approach, trying to imply that, yeah, they could kill OpenAI.
Other actors in this space were not being cautious. We're maybe going too fast and creating too many hazards.
But they have the core capability, but they're just not trying to rush it to market. Like,
got you. So they have it under the, they have it, they have the horses. They're just not showing you because it's dangerous.
So we kept getting these kind of like, there used to be these rumors when I was younger, like my uncle works at Nintendo and he told me this. My uncle works at Nintendo and I heard this. And he kept hearing these things about Google, like, oh, Google has a model that's way better than GPT-4 and they're just waiting to release it. We kept hearing this. We heard that before Palm 2 came out. Then Palm 2 came out. We're like, this isn't a GPT-4 level model.
Yeah.
Now understand, and I'm going to try to make this point throughout. Google, after OpenAI launched ChatGPT and GPT-4, Google has several different companies or the divisions that work on AI. They have Google Brain. There's, special AI divisions. There is DeepMind, which was a separate company, which then Google acquired and basically kept as sort of its own entity. And DeepMind and Google Brain, they are extremely talented, extremely capable. DeepMind has created incredible advancements in AI, AlphaGo, AlphaGo Zero, which just changed the paradigm of stuff. So sometimes I seem critical. Let me make it very clear. The researchers and the people working there are doing world-class, incredible work. They invented the transformer, et cetera, with all that. Okay. But you have to separate what the researchers are doing versus the corporate entity and management and stuff too, because that's the thing. Like, well, we invented the trans. You'll hear somebody executive. We invented the trans. Like, no, you weren't even there when that happened. And you also, you wouldn't give the people that made the transformer the money to then follow through like OpenAI did. So it's kind of like, yes, we squandered the Transformer is a way to sort of, we didn't give our researchers the resources and money to make this.
And let me point out from a tech business perspective that AI obviously is something that has been a part of, technology for a very long time. Machine learning has been a part of technology largely behind the scenes for a very, very long time. It's powered a lot of things that people know. The modern epic of AI, really in terms of a pop culture perspective, begins with ChatGPT. ChatGPT being something that is now explosive and shows propulsion in this field that had otherwise been a tremendous fascination and a point of emphasis for a lot of people in tech, but not a lot of consumers of tech. For Google, which has been a trailblazing, amazing company riding that line, technological superiority and consumer-facing, the consumer-facing product that defined the web in search, AI is something that if it's here now, they need a product that will play in this space, because a lot of the stuff that people were using ChatGPT for were things that they might have otherwise used a Google search for in the past.
Yeah, there's that, and there's the factor that Google has been probably the leading investor in AI. Google has, between Google and DeepMind, you're not at the current state of AI where we are now without Google and DeepMind. And everybody at OpenAI will tell you that. Everybody there will tell you just how much Google has pushed this. And that was why it really hurt and stung Google, was GPT-4 coming from a tiny 300 person company that had nowhere near the resources that Google did. And that would put, Sundar, and it put the rest of them in an awkward position, because their investors and stuff are like, how come they have this and we don't? Why is this tiny little company filled with these weirdos doing this and you aren't? And they had to kind of explanations. Well, we're working on a broader things. We're doing this, da, da, da. The short answer is they didn't try it. They didn't set out and resource. They were trying to build bigger ones, but they didn't resource. They didn't give their engineers enough compute and researchers enough compute to do it. They didn't say, we need to try to get this thing. Let's throw all of our effort at this thing, like OpenAI. OpenAI worked towards one thing, which was building this incredibly capable model. So they didn't prioritize it. Had they done that 2 or 3 years ago, we could have had a GPT-4 level model publicly released by them probably a year ago. So if they had started several years ago to do this, I think they could have. There's a timeline when some senior exec there at Google who actually understands AI, which is questionable, but prior to, Dennis coming in from DeepMind, would go look at this and go, oh, shoot, we need to throw everything at this. That only happened after OpenAI. So,
yeah,
there's this tremendous pressure at Google, tremendous pressure. So they form, they combine DeepMind, they combine Google Brain, they bring them all together and say, OK, we're now one team. The head of DeepMind now becomes a VP at Google instead of being CEO of DeepMind. And they're now told, we have to build a real GPT-4 level model. We really have to build something at this scale. Now, the problem is this. GPT-4 came out in March. There's all this, people looking at the capabilities, people realizing how capable it is. Now, Google knew last year, Google knew from leaks and everything, where it had a pretty good idea what OpenAI was doing. Because remember, GPT-4 finished training summer of last year. That's how old GPT-4 is. Summer of last year. So Google knew, but Google didn't take it seriously until they saw the execs didn't take it seriously until they saw how serious everybody else did. And they started to take a market hit, because all of a sudden shareholders and other people were upset at Google for the fact that, like, hey, are you not the AI people? And they have to be, well, we are. And they did Palm. And Palm was this, let's take a thing we have right now, throw a bunch of resources at it, try to get something out the door and say, hey, we're relevant. And it wasn't. It just wasn't there.
Meanwhile, GPT-4. And again, if you have the public awareness of ChatGPT, and then GPT-4 comes out and it's obviously a lot more powerful. And now you start to move into the world where normies know what the capability of these platforms are. So GPT 3.5, 3, and then 4 comes out with limited access on ChatGPT. Now, I would imagine from the inside, you would see a great rise in requests for access or pro accounts, that this is something that demonstrates itself not only as impressive technology, but also as a possible genre defining business development.
Oh, yeah, because OpenAI provides GPT-4 access via the API. You can build, I can build an app and I can plug it in. Google had nothing like that. They had nothing, compared. 3.5-ish, maybe Palm-ish, but even then, some caveats there. So Google knows, and they're not going to do one thing. They're going to continue to do this. And I believe that they are working on a bigger, better, more capable model. I believe that the DeepMind folks and them have a much more really, really paradigm shifting model that they are trying to develop for. But they needed to show something this year, because I don't think Sundar and them wanted to have the timeline be 2023, the year of GPT-4, or excuse me, 23, and then 2024. Be Google releases something, and then the risk that OpenAI is going to put something else out, which, if you follow the time frame, is very likely. And
well, yeah, so that's the one thing that when you said that last week, and that is what you said last week, was that there was going to be some kind of demonstration between when you said that and the end of the year. Turns out it was this
and
week.
And I had no inside knowledge. I had no inside knowledge of Google at all.
And the thing that I couldn't quite wrap my head around was that it seems like a very, very, very aggressive move to put out something in a limited capacity when you can push it forward when it's fully baked in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. I mean, who knows where they are in their development cycle, but to do it so you can say in the Wikipedia that your GPT and GPT-4 came out in the same year seemed like something that was not necessarily worth it to me, but obviously it was, considering what happened.
Yeah, I think that you have end of quarter, you have Sundar having to be able to tell the shareholders enough to tell everybody that we're on the right path. Okay. So you take a team, you put them in, and they say you got to build something better than GPT-4, and you only got X amount of time to do it. Now, the advantage they have is they've got like way more compute than OpenAI has, way more people to handle a bunch of the smaller stuff. And this way more people isn't always necessarily good. There's the book, The Mythical Man Month, which talks about the Microsoft problem. Talk about this problem decades before Microsoft ran into this, where you keep throwing engineers at a problem. And all that did was create more meetings and make it slower. But that being said, they needed to get some, you know, Sundar wanted them. He said, you got to get something out the door. So we hear about Gemini. We hear that it's better than GPT-4. We also hear, and this is really key here, also hear the thing that it's going to be truly multimodal. And what does multimodal mean? Okay. Original GPT-3 just took text. Then GPT-4 came out, and GPT-4 could handle images. And a multimodal means you can give it things besides just text. So GPT-4V, the current version, can handle text. It can handle images. Okay. And Whisper is like kind of like a tiny GPT model that can handle audio and can actually handle text and stuff. Multimodal, everybody knows multimodal is a path forward. And so OpenAI, when I did the video for GPT-4, I showed, here's its multimodal capability. This is how it is handling images. We'd heard that Google was able to do video. We heard they could do video. And now that's, I'm like fascinated. I was fascinated by like, what are they doing? Because the way these models process stuff is you give them a bunch of tokens. And what is a token? Token is a number that represents a part of a word or part of an image or some aspect of an image. And it's just a series of just these numbers. And you can have image tokens, which is like, I could take a photo of a dog and I could turn it into a string of image tokens, or I could take some text about a dog and put them into word tokens. So GPT-4V will take a string of image tokens and a stream of text tokens and then some image tokens, and it will go through there. And that's why you can upload a photo to GPT-4V or multiple photos and interact with it, ask questions about it, right?
Yeah.
When I was working on the release of GPT-4, and I've got to show capabilities, and we also want to show the capabilities of GPT-4V, and I'm playing around with this stuff, and I have the evals and stuff, the stuff the researchers have shown. And I'm also looking at it from sort of a fun point of view. And, you know, one night I'm like, what? And I have to think, how do I make this stuff practical? How do I make this sort of thing that, like, you know, my mom will understand?
Yeah.
And one night I'm playing around with this, you know, it's months before it's released. And I get an idea, and I go into my refrigerator and I take a photo. I take that photo of what's inside the refrigerator, and I go into GPT-4V and I say, hey, this is a photo of my refrigerator. What can I make with this? And it starts describing the different things I can cook and I can do with this. I'm like, awesome. This is great. This is something we're going to put on launch day. So that was one. If you go to the GPT-4 launch page, you'll see that there. You also see my name as Easter eggs in there. Some of the other people worked on it, which is, you know, we talked about that last time. But anyhow, That became now a benchmark, by the way, a benchmark way to demonstrate capabilities, because Google had in their technical report, they actually show a photograph of a bunch of objects and say, what can you cook with this or whatever, which I was like flattered to see that like my photo of a refrigerator thing became now an example of, you know, how you show off the capabilities of vision model. But anyhow, one of the things I played with was I wrote a little script and I took sequences from YouTube of like somebody doing a like a workout move, right? And yeah. I would extract like 8 frames. I'd take 8 frames of this and I would feed it into the model and I'd say, what is this person doing? And it could generalize across the frames and see what changed from image to image to image. And it would say, oh, this person's doing, you know, jumping jacks, this person's doing this. I'm like, oh, this is really cool. You know, and we shared it internally, like, cool, it can extrapolate between images, it can see this sort of stuff. I'm like, okay, we'll put that as a little neat little kind of thing there. But, you know, we're hearing Google's got a video model, like, and so we don't want to come out and say, oh, it can do video, because this is just taking, you know, a handful of frames and telling you what's going on.
So, right? so let me ask you this, especially with the token stuff, the limitations technically on doing video is just that obviously you have the amount of frames that are in a second. So it would just be a upper limit token request to right. do something like video.
Yeah, it's basically there is a ratio of which an image can be converted into tokens, and how it's converted can be very different than how text works. But just like you can only put, like in Google's model has a 32,000 token context, which is like 25,000 words. You can only put so many images in there. You can only put so many images in there. So I can't give it, like, if I want to give it in the way, you can only put so many images in there. So if I give it, and I'll get into what happened here. So anyhow, we hear though that there's possibilities, there's ways in which you might be able to get around that. There's ways in which you might have a model that, like, if you use the ChatGPT and you talk to it and you hear how it listens to you and then it knows when you stop speaking and whatnot, there is a mechanism in there that's understanding when you reach the end of a speech, whatever, which can be pause detection, but also can be a way to listen for end words, et cetera, or understand, I think this ended. You might have things like that in video where you can say, hey, I don't need to take, as this comes in, it might just sort of say, I'm only going to look for changes, significant changes in that when the embedding space changes. There are ways in which you could really process video and do this. And years ago, we did a demonstration of a thing called YOLO. It's an algorithm called You Only Look Once, which it's now, there's tons of variations of it, which just is a real-time way to take a look at a video stream and identify objects in a stream. So there are ideas out there for how to do kind of a real-time kind of thing and do this stuff. But if you use ChatGPT or use GPT-4 or Bard, you know that it takes time. When you ask it a question, it's not instantaneous. It has to da-da-da-da-da-da. So when we're hearing that they're doing video, I'm like, how do you get the latency down? You have to get, if you're doing this real time, you've got to get your latency. So anyways, there was this idea that if they've solved this.
That's a huge breakthrough. That is a massive, phenomenal. Massive step forward.
Right. So, and we keep hearing video and I'm excited because Google invents groundbreaking technology. And if Google solves it, it means it's solvable. So fast forward this week.
Yes.
And we hear rumors, and a couple rumors came up. And the reason that we heard rumors last week that they were postponing the delay of Gemini because it didn't, one rumor was that it wasn't as strong in other languages, which I think may be partially true, but I have a bigger theory why they also canceled all the press previews this week.
Yeah. Well, so this is where I put on my journalist hat. Yeah. And I would say that it can't do foreign languages well enough, and we want to hold the release of the entire product because of it. Sounds like a thing that you would very much like to tell the public. Yes. Now, it might be true, but ChatGPT and GPT-4, for all of its great skills, and this is in my conversations with other people who have tried to work with it in foreign languages, they say it's better in English than it is in other languages. So that, number one, contrasts against this other product that you were kind of trying to compete against from Google's perspective, but also demonstrates the idea that you are somebody that cares about this kind of stuff. And that's why you're willing to hold it until this element of it is ready. That did not seem particularly, if that were the case, I feel like you could explain that as a condition to the reporters that you were giving access to. I think that that would look, that would be fine at the nut graph of the story that I was told this is not ready, that it'll be better by next year. That happens all the time in early demos.
Yeah. So, and I want to give OpenAI is a chaotic company, and it's just everybody saw the laundry of OpenAI spread across the Silicon Valley lawn over the last several weeks.
Chaotic? OpenAI? Huh? Really?
But I will tell you this. I originally came in as an engineer. I worked on capability discovery, first prompt engineer, blah, blah. Then I switched to the comms team. Never had I ever heard or been instructed or whatever to leak a thing or to say this or to say that or to misrepresent or do anything to try to buy time. We never, and people like, ChatGPT, that was really a stealth product launch. Like, no, it was not. It was not. And OpenAI's pattern has always been, we will talk when we have the goods. And that's like an Apple thing. We will talk when we have the goods. We will not go out and try to leak to build up hype. We not do that because that just can, that writes checks that you sometimes can't cash in your reputation. And we just would rather show up and do. When we did our demo for GPT-4V, okay, GPT-4V, the vision capable model, Greg wanted to do a live demo. Okay. Yeah. Greg Brockman. Okay. And I'm in the room going like, no, this can go wrong in so many ways. I'm like adamant because I'm coming from a magician, you know, as a guy who's doing this and watch tech demos fall apart. I'm terrified about the idea of a live demo. And I see my job there is to be like, no, let's pre-record it. Let's do this, whatever. Greg believes in the product. Greg is a zero bullshit guy. Greg is a guy that would push back if I wanted to do something flashy or misrepresented stuff or he thought whatever. That is his point. That is the point. Greg went on live, did a live stream and did a demonstration of the GPT-4V capabilities because he was willing to stake his reputation on it, the reputation of the company, because he believed we're coming from a point of sincerity. We're going to show you this. If it breaks, then that's on us to fix it. You know, if it does something cool, then yay for us, whatever. And I love that. I respected that a lot. And again, I'm like, no, you know, I'm like going against, but it was just the strength of this thing that like, you know, I would love to say, and I'm like, oh yeah. And I told him you should do it. I'm like, no, don't. And he was right. He was right. Okay. Cause it was who OpenAI was. And that's considered perhaps one of the greatest tech demos of all time because he's going live and showing, you know, creating websites and doing all sorts of stuff through images and stuff. So Google is in his bind where they don't want to look like I believe they have stuff in the works and the potential to do really great things and to move the paradigm beyond GPT-4V. I think they're capable of AGI at some point. I think that I worry about the organizational structure.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I do want to make clear in this field. Google has all of the ingredients. They've got the money. They've got the brains. They've got the data to train these things, which is a thing that is important and only getting more important as the field gets more mature, and they have the legacy in the technology. That's all you'd want. I can't imagine wanting anything else to succeed in this field. They should be able to do it, and I think both of us believe they will.
We have an incredible collection of brain power there, and I think that, like, the work of DeepMind is going to possibly impact the quality of my life later on. There may be points and stuff that somebody's going to point to the research that they did, and they did that. And that is going to be true of the work of what's going on at Google. The research is there. And I just had somebody go, oh, you've got to be happy about it. I'm like, no, I'm not happy at all about this. Like, I am frustrated, and we'll get into what's going on. I'm frustrated because you have incredibly talented people, and you have people thinking long-term. And you have these executives and stuff who are literally thinking about their own legacy, their own short-term period, making decisions that are going to negatively impact the growth of AI. Like, the thing that concerns me isn't the researchers. It isn't the people trying to build it. It's the people who trying to, you know, shape it in a way that's more, you know, more selfish, I guess. Anyhow, point is.
Well, so Google, hold on. Before we get to that, let's remind everybody that you can support this show at patreon.com/weirdthings, patreon.com/weirdthings. Make sure that we continue to keep this show rolling out. patreon.com/weirdthings. So let's get to what actually happened.
So two things happened. One is Google was scheduled to do demonstrations this week. you know, at their HQ for reporters to show to them or virtually show. It was scheduled to do demonstrations to actually show them Gemini, the model finally coming out. We knew that it wasn't going to be actually released. Nobody was going to have access to it. It wasn't going to be in Bard. There wasn't going to be an API until next year, but they were going to show reporters, hey, let's give you a preview.
Yeah.
That got canceled. Okay. Which is weird because it's like, this is the most favorable conditions you can imagine.
Yes.
And I have a theory why. We'll get into that a little bit later. So that got canceled, which was like, okay, why are you, why, if you, this thing can, if a, one of your researchers can be at a keyboard and do things with this, why are you canceling that? So we'll get into that in a second. They announced, hey, Gemini is coming. We're going to show this. We have several. So what they did was a very marketing sort of thing is they say, hey, Gemini, we have Gemini is a new category of paradigm shifting models. I've watched the reporting from like reporters who had early access who didn't ask the right questions or like breathless, like the AI boom starts now. It starts this, who literally don't know the topic, haven't, can't even look back 6 months ago to see where the state of the art was. So Google announces that they have like four models. They have Google, they have Gemini. Let me get the thing right. They're announcing. Yeah, Nano, which is like on device.
Yeah.
They have Nano, they have Pro, which is in Bard right now. Pro is in
Bard now, and Ultra is the one for which they believe is GPT-4 better than GPT-4 in certain benchmarks.
Yeah.
And that is coming sometime in 2024.
Yeah, early 2024. So they announced three models, right? Now the problem is you can call a thing by that name, and I think they made a really big mistake here, and I'll explain in a second there. So they said they have Ultra, Pro, and Nano. For Ultra, Ultra is the one that's like the super multimodal model. This is the one that's supposed to handle video and audio and all this sort of stuff and whatnot. That is their GPT-4 killer, okay? So they put out a video.
Yeah.
This video comes out. Now, I went and looked at the specs, by the way. The first thing I did is I looked at the evaluations, the comparison to GPT-4. I noticed something to me that's a little bit, one is almost everything is just a few percentage points better than GPT-4.
Yes.
Which was interesting, which tells you that was their benchmark, by the way, where OpenAI was literally OpenAI's attitude that we have GPT-3, let's do GPT-2, let's do 10x the compute and do GPT-3. GPT, let's do 10x the compute and do GPT-4. Yeah. Let's build the best thing we can with what we have. Google had set this weird benchmark of just beating GPT-4, which tells me something that came down from top to the researchers like, no, we just need to do this. Let's just do this. In one of the benchmarks, and we're going to get to the really big part here, the really frustrating thing, but I'm going to tell you, but like that there are several different ways that you try to test these capabilities, right? And I believe like there is questions to know which version of GPT-4 they tested against too. It looks like they used an older model for some of it. I don't want to stake my reputation on that, but that's one of the things that it looks like because some of those scores look like I thought it was doing better than that, but maybe not. The one score, it's marginally better in several areas by a percentage point or barely a percentage point or whatever. The one area that it was much lower in was a thing called HeliSwag. Okay, HeliSwag is a very interesting test. And what HeliSwag is a way to sort of measure a model's ability to sort of like kind of common sense reason across tasks. You know, you might say, you know, I walked inside here and I wanted to find out, like, complete this narrative, complete this sort of thing. What if this is true? What else is true? Kind of thing. It's a really good common sense reasoning test. It was invented because these models became more capable. It was the Paul Allen Institute came up with this test. And so the idea is to just ask it kind of different kinds of stuff about, can you continue this? Can you generalize across all the things you've learned? Can you learn math here? And then can I give you a word problem? Embedded another kind of problem, see how well you do. Okay. And I would say that it is like you can give it options, like which is the most likely to be true. And it's also very good to sort of see because you say we choose between A, B, or C or D, its ability to reliably predict the right option tells you that it understands, has a very good understanding of that. And it also kind of can be sort of be an indication of hallucination because if it says that it picks something else, that it's inventing a reason for this to be true. Gemini Ultra was 87.8% on the HeliSwag.
Mm-hmm.
GPT-4 is 95.3%.
Okay. So that is markedly lower, especially considering it was so close to GPT-4 in so many other categories, barely ahead
almost of it. Almost a 10% difference in performance drop there. Okay. So that is, and some might argue too, that HeliSwag is a better measure of how overall intelligent a model is rather than learning a specific task. That HeliSwag tells you what, if you wanted to say, what is the smarter, the bigger, the better problems, general problem solver, HeliSwag is that test. That it was so much lower on HeliSwag was very interesting, because to me, it indicates that they were just trying to get it better in each one of these evals. And HeliSwag is the one eval you really have to do big training and big, really long training, et cetera, to get to a really good thing where the model picks up these deeper patterns and connects to stuff, whatever. And so that was telling to me. So I just look at that and I go, oh, shoot. A description that I gave was they built a car for the test track.
Yeah,
but not for the road. And they built a thing to get these things, but not a thing that's really for the road. And that felt like the analogy to me. Now, take a break here to pause. The fact that they put this model together this quickly, the fact that the Google Brain DeepMind teams came together in just a matter of 6 months or whatever they had to work on this, made this, is impressive. And that's crazy. Should be applauded for this. It is absolutely a incredible achievement, you know, because they got pushed into this. Now, granted, they had all the money in the world, all the compute in the world, but that's still, you need more. You need to be smart. You need to be really nimble and you be able to do this. And so I want to make it very clear what they did. And I believe that those core people will be able to do really amazing, build some great stuff, but without the stupid pressures to sort of check off boxes for marketing or whatever. I think we're going to be able to see amazing things from it. I think that in some of the capabilities, like its image capabilities, I think they really are state of the art. I think they probably have done things that surpass what's going on. So I just want to make that very, very clear about that. Cause people keep trying to read this. Like I've had, you know, talked to other people kind of read me into being like that. I'm like trying to like trash Google. I'm like, no, like I think the researchers did a great job. This is the execs doing this. So anyhow,
here we go.
The thing,
this is the big thing. So now everybody has understood. And by the way, folks, listeners to this show, in my mind, there's like 300 to 500 people that know a lot about AI that can tell you about this moment in history, not only in tech history, but in human history. And there's probably a couple dozen that I think have the communication skills on top of that to make it clear to the normies like us. So what we just got right there is a very, very succinct and pointed understanding of where the cutting edge of AI is. And it's very important to understand because of what was promised in this launch, which was what, Andrew?
Well, the thing we'd all been waiting for was the multimodal and the video and the idea of that the smarter model could do video, et cetera. Now, side note, I'm in the middle of writing a book and I've had the OpenAI distraction before and I've been trying to just sit down and write my book with nothing going on in the world of AI to be able to get the book done. So the announcement comes out today and I'm like, comes out 3 days ago. And I'm like, all right, let me just take a look at it. I got to get this book done. I'm not going to pay a lot of attention to it. I see a demo where they're showing, you know, looking at like objects. There's an overhead view and I see this thing where he's showing a rubber duck and showing these sort of things with like images and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, you know, but like, I know from what I did with this, but I'm like, I really want to dive in to see how they solve the video problem later. Cause I'm excited to see what they did. Cause I have a lot of ideas where they could go. But I'm talking to Justin and Justin actually watched it with the audio. And what was your reaction?
It was a commercial. It was not a actual tech demo. And my key to that was it was presented in a way, with very careful wording that led people to believe that this was an actual as live tech demo. And there, the voice is a person with a Indian accented English, but it to me sounded too perfect. By the way, I think I noticed today when I rewatched it on the stream, it also begins with the Google Home sound. Yeah. Like that thing. So it's like, it is leading you to believe, but by my ears, the narration was too perfect and the cuts were too the images.
As a guy who has had to edit down researcher videos and demonstration videos and for just about any video thing that came out of OpenAI the last up until I left, I had my hand on head and you'll even see my face in some of it. It's funny. But anyhow, as a guy that's looked at this, I'm like, yeah, like you described it. And I'm like, well, let me go see. And it was Ethan Mullick, who I think he's a Wharton professor, talks about AI and business, really worth following on Twitter. He does a lot of great stuff there. He had asked a question like, hey, is this doing images or whatever? And I saw his thing on the Twitter feed and I'm like, well, I got to go watch this video.
Yeah.
I watched the video and the first thing you see across the screen is it says, we've been testing the capabilities of Gemini, our new multimodal AI model. We've been capturing footage and testing a wide range of challenges, showing it a series of images. Nobody reads the second sentence and nobody understands what that sentence really means in the context of what's going on. You then get at the bottom sequences shortened throughout. Okay. What do those things mean? What does that mean? Okay. Well, in the video, you're watching an overhead view and you're seeing this person put objects and put things in front of it, draw things on post-it notes of musical instruments and starts to play music. And it looks like the impression that I got, what they're trying to show and what many technically inclined people got was it's watching a, and I've watched smart, I just watched a video by one of my favorite YouTubers on tech stuff describe it as, oh, it's watching a video feed and it does this. So people think, and I'm going to get into why this is really a distinction that matters significantly.
Yes.
Is you think it's watching a video feed and in real time
answering these questions.
Interacting with the, yes. You feel like this is Johnny Five, the robot looking at the world around it, telling you which way to go and to do this sort of stuff in real, that is doing that. And it's watching video and doing this thing in real time, not taking video clips and telling you later on, whatever. So I look at this. And I hit that sound up at the beginning. And I'm like, they do this. There's like a recording started.
Yep.
All right, let's begin this. And at the end, he goes, I think we're done here. Like this was session number. This is Hollywood. This was like session number 328 with Gemini, you know, OMG.
And
that, right.
And that's the thing is it read to me initially the way that they were framing it, that it was exactly that. This is 3 o'clock in the morning in Palo Alto and the sun's, just about to peek over the pines. And all of a sudden you finally have the demo you've been waiting for that you've, tweaked and tweaked and tweaked. And now this is a thing, but it was clearly a commercial.
Forget commercial. Let's use other words. So I'm watching this and I'm going, how is it deciding which? Because I'm thinking like, well, if I, you know, I could, like, if I had to do this with GPT-4V, I would be grabbing frames. But man, how do I know I could feed it a video feed and grab it in frames and look for a difference and feed it to them. But then the model's got to know, when is it supposed to tell me something? When is it? I got to press enter. When am I sending the thing to it? How am I deciding what frames it's doing? How I'm like I could, as I said before, a year ago, I was getting GPT-4V to do videos. I would give it a specific number of sequences. I'd take a minute video and grab every fourth frame or whatever. And I'm looking at this going, man, how did they solve this? And I read that and I look at the video. I'm like, wait, video. They gave it a series of sequences. I'm like, okay. So I pull up, they have a technical report.
Yeah.
I pull up the technical report to get to the video portion to find out what the hell is going on. They're not feeding it video. They're giving it 16 frames. They're taking a video clip. They took a video clip of, let's say, of a picture of a duck.
Yep.
And of a video of a duck. They grab that video clip and they grab 16 from, you know, one at the beginning, one at the end, they grab 16 frames of video and then basically went into Bard, their version of Bard that has this, pasted in the images, and then they typed in a question, say, what is this an image of? Duh, it's a duck doing this. Okay. Then they did a thing with, like, you know, I don't know, tic-tac-toe, whatever the other demo was. They took 16 images. They selected where in the video sequence to grab those from. It's an effing image model. It's not a video model. I was amazed that they decided to call this video when they showed a feature that GPT-4V was doing 6 months ago publicly, and that they called this a video model when it was not. And GPT-4V, by the way, can handle more images than this can. It's more of a video model than this was. So the long story short is they present, and then real time. So what this was is, you realize they were not, nobody was talking, and they found out a reporter finally asked and said, hey, were they given an audio? They're like, no, they typed it in. It wasn't even doing audio processing to answer the question. They were, and I think the model's capable. Like, I read the paper, it can take audio clips and convert it into the stuff, which is not a big leak. But anyhow, this was in the market, by the way, when this video came out and you watch this video and I watch very technical people go, holy cow, this is amazing. Google stock went up 5%. They went up $75 billion. Now, I'm not going to say that it was all in the strength of that video, but I would say that video was the driving force of that.
The sign that Google is in the AI game and it is a major, major player in a way.
And
that,
they've made a technical leap that OpenAI has not. That exactly. was the thing. And yeah. I've seen this breathless coverage. Look what they did. They made this technical leap. And then I'm like, no, not only did they not make a technical leap in that, they're actually behind OpenAI because OpenAI's current model handles over 100,000 tokens and in theory could handle more video, et cetera. And so I'm like, I think that like they showed that they're behind.
Yeah.
But that video demo was so persuasive. And my frustration was the tech reporters is that it had been pointed out to them 3 days ago. Here is a thing to look at. And was like, oh, you know, I don't know. And now finally the story's breaking. Now the story's making it out that demo was a fake. That demo was not accurate of what it can do or the state of it. And Google is not ahead of where they should be. You know, I'm obviously worked up about this because I feel bad for the researchers at Google and DeepBrain who I think probably did not want it presented this way. I don't think they want it this way. I think that they're going to have things are going to be capable. And I think that we finally get to interact and see the image recognition capabilities of it. I have no doubt it is probably better than the public version of GPT-4V. I have no doubt that it probably has better fidelity, has better, you know, be able to do things like this. I think they built something. I think with the data they're able to train on, I think they built something really capable. But marketing or Google being Google decided to describe it and present it in a context that was extremely misleading, extremely misleading.
So wait, when you say Google being Google, do you mean the market pressures that they needed to show that they were competitive in this field or something deeper within the company?
Yeah. I mean, Google is an ad tech company. Google is, you know, they make their money primarily off of advertising. Google is driven by people who think about that. They're people who think about the world of marketing and advertising. They have an incredible base of amazing technologists and core thing like that, but they're not the ones driving the company as much as, or the mission as much as it probably maybe should be led by that.
Yeah.
And here was an example of, they went in, they saw what the researchers had, and they're like, all right, nerds, this is what we need to do. Can we describe it as this? And they'd be like, and I haven't been in that meeting, right? But can I use this? And the researcher's like, well, you know, and I'm like, I at least understand enough of the tech and have enough respect for what they're doing that I'm not going to, I don't have the power to tell them I'm going to do it no matter what, but also respect for what they do. But here, they just came in and said, no, we got to do this. We're going to present it like this, whatever. I think we'll hear more about that, but that you don't want the headlines to be Google faked the AI demo. Because it's just, they've done, I mean, I've may have been collecting a number of these headlines, it's just, like I said, we're going to see great things out of this team. We're going to see great things coming from here, but.
Yeah.
Let me just sum it up. So they didn't come up with some of the thing is there was no super secret sauce to processing video. There was not. They have an image recognition model.
Not here now. That's dead clear, dead simple. They purported to show a multimodal live video interaction with their AI that was extremely capable to the level of GPT-4. And at least the multimodal video part did not happen. That is not being demonstrated here.
So I haven't watched a lot of the other videos where they use this thing and it's hard to know. So, and two things I want to make a point of. One is I suspect the model's slow. I suspect it's very slow.
And that's the reason why you canceled the demos.
That's why they didn't want reporters. I think I have three things I want to say. One, I think it's very slow. I think that's the problem is that they built a big model and it might have gazillion parameters, whatever. And I think that's probably likely true. And I think that means it's a very slow model and they didn't want to have to do a demo for reporters where it's going, the big cat did that, you know, they were afraid of a demo showing this. Now they will make it faster over time. That will happen. They're capable engineers. So I think it's extremely slow and they knew that it could not stand up to a live demo. Two, I think they probably have a hallucination problem because we saw this in their actual demo where they talk about the duck, like why does the duck float, whatever. And it's, oh, because PVC is lighter than water and a lot of PVC is like weighs more than water, you know? And so it was like, it got an answer wrong in their demo, which is the second time that we've known this. They did the Palm 2, the same thing. I think there's a hallucination issue. I think that if you can't, if you're failing a heliswag, there's a high probability that you're having a hallucination issue.
Yeah.
And hallucinations where it just is inaccurate. I think there may be a significant hallucination. I think it may be very slow. There may be a really big hallucination issue. So then, but what Google wants to do is they want to say that we released Gemini. They have Ultra, Pro, and Nano. And so what do they do? Gemini Pro is available in Bard today. And I saw this. I'm like, this is a mistake.
Yeah.
Because I ran into this at OpenAI when GPT-4 came out. People were like, I used it. Wasn't that smart? And I'm like, did you use Pro or did you use the, do you have a Pro account or what were you using? Like, I don't know. I'm like, okay, well, it was GPT-3.5 and then there's GPT-4. And they're very different when you're trying to test for certain kinds of things. And people didn't know. And that was on us for not making that clear. So Google said, hey, Gemini, look at this amazing model, everybody. Now it's available now on Bard. We've made it available. Well, Pro is not GPT-4 class. It's 3.5, maybe better than GPT-3.5, but it's not a GPT-4 level model. So now the reports are Gemini sucks. Gemini's not that good. Gemini's not this. Whereas the real Gemini Ultra, once they get it to perform, you know, at speed, whatever, is probably going to be a phenomenal model. And many people, the hella swag common sense reasoning makes me think that maybe that people might pick up that it, think that it's dumber because of that. I don't know. But I think, assuming that's not the case, I think that people will think that it's just as good as GPT-4, but they can't use it right now. And the model they're using has the same name. It's not good.
I mean, that's been the feedback I've gotten colloquially from people that I know that have used it. They have not had great experiences with it, save for one person that said that it did, you know, a better job at summarizing certain things. But other than that, if you're looking at this from a branding perspective, you don't want your number one thing that you just launched. And in a lot of ways, you are staking portions of your company on to be judged on a lesser version that's not going to deliver in the same way. Because that's the one thing about this field, and this has been reality since ChatGPT, is that it's not a hype-driven field. It's a product, you can do it, you can do a thing with it kind of field. It is a very utilitarian field right now. And that's where I want to separate it from other things that have dominated tech conversations like crypto and metaverse and stuff like that. There was a lot of, well, it's promising. Eventually it's going to be very important, but you want to get in now so you are there when it happens. That's not the case with where we are with AI now. You have people, it is changing culture now. People are using it now. When ChatGPT launches a new, or sorry, when ChatGPT puts in a new version of, you know, a 3.5 to 4, people use it immediately. They get worth out of it immediately, which means I don't know who, but what pressures they have, what managerial structure. I said on DTNS on Thursday that I think that this is something that if it's not gotten right, there might be head rolling situation next year, not immediately, but next year, because it's, you know, in the parlance of The Wire, this is dope on the table. It's either there or it's not. You either have the goods or you don't, because right now there's somebody with the goods that has totally captured this market. And I think Google can get there. Like we said before, there's no reason why they can't. They would be leadership and management if they can't, because everything else is there. All the other ingredients are there. But this was, in my mind, like, not just not great for them, not just not great for AI. I thought it was a massive red flag for the company.
I think that in a long enough time frame, they will get things right. Of course, I flash back to when Disney bought Star Wars. And I'm like, they may have a few missteps, but ultimately, I think they'll get it right.
They'll get it right.
And Disney... Disney has incredibly talented people in there, incredibly talented. You know, I had a friend that was at the Lucasfilm Christmas party, and it was not a very happy affair for the most part, because it's just not been a good year, banner year for Lucasfilm. And you have people there who've been there for years who understand it, know it would be great with straight storytelling, whatever, and other people above them coming in and trying to force things and do things. And there is a lot of similarities between, like, is Gemini the Ahsoka of Disney content of, in AI? Okay.
Because we're hoping for the Andor. We're hoping for the Andor.
I've got a media friend who's like, oh, you're happy that this is going. I'm like, no, I'm not happy. I didn't want it to be a case where Google shows up without the goods, because I have confidence that Google in a longer time frame will achieve great things. And I think they're more responsible than a lot of other companies would be. You know, I want my friends at OpenAI to be the ones that are always leading the edge. But if Google's close second or comes up with some innovations, I wouldn't be angry. You know, it'd be a thing.
It's better for the entire field. You know, you want these people out there doing it.
Yeah, I want people to be listening more to the researchers, and I mean to the media, paying attention to really. And I get that it's hard, but like, I will give you a little when. There was the whole a couple things too. I think the thing I'll give you something to watch out for next year, which will be interesting. But when the whole thing happened with OpenAI, and there were stories about, like, we heard there was this big advancement. This is what it is, that they've achieved a baby AGI or Q or these other things, and there's just like this big leap.
This was in the aftermath of the board kerfuffle. But part of the, like, well, what was the MacGuffin? Appeared in the bedroom now, that spooked everybody? This was one of them.
And I'm not, and you know, by the time I left OpenAI, a lot research had been pretty much segmented off from other stuff. And there's just stuff going on there that I would, you know, if I sat around and talked to people at tables or said, can I play with somebody, I get to know? But it wasn't like stuff wasn't company wide known by that point. Like, it was literally by necessity, whatever is that this stuff. So there's stuff going on there that people say, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know about a thing or whatever. And I'm under an NDA and I can't talk about stuff, but I can tell you, I don't know everything going on there. Like, I don't think I'm violating my NDA to say, I don't know everything going on there.
Yeah.
But I would hear people say, like, after the thing about press, like, have you heard about this thing? You heard about this thing? And I'm like, one, I can't talk about that. But number two is, like, there have been amazing advancements in plain sight that nobody picked up. And I've said this before about OpenAI, because I've been trying to call attention to say, hey, this thing here is really significant. This is going to be a leap forward. You know, we released a thing called the instruct models, which basically we took the base model and gave it a lot of instructions on how to follow instructions and said, hey, this is really significant. It improves the outputs. I was personally frustrated because it sort of limited the capability of the model for the really cool stuff as a guy who was like to do advanced prompt engineering. But for average people, it made it more useful. And we put a paper out there that was whatever.
Yeah.
Put it in a wrapper, put it in a interface with a chat interface and called it ChatGPT, and it broke the world.
Yeah.
That was out months before. It was in months, months before. It was in plain. Anybody could have played with that, and it was the same capability. Code. You know, remember I did a thing about when it started doing code capabilities, I was going breathless about, look at this is. And largely like, yawn. And now, like, every code tool now uses code. Okay. And so there have been several significant advances that have come out there that we've announced, you know, back in May. There was a thing. I had people going, oh, we heard there was like this advancement in mathematics. I'm like, well, let me refer you to a public blog post from May of this year describing a really cool advancement in mathematics.
Yes.
Like, oh, no. And the joke in the magic business is that if you want to keep something secret, put it in a magic magazine, like publish it in a magic book, and nobody will pay attention to it. And that's very true. You'll be like, oh, you'll see David Copperfield. Where is that? Like, oh, page 44. Like, really? Like, yeah, you just whip right by it because you didn't know. The same thing in AI. The biggest advancements are happening in plain sight. And the problem is that people want to hear a rumor, and often the researchers don't know. Sometimes the researchers are last to know the significance of something because they're focusing on getting a metric from point two to point three or to point four or whatever. So
yeah,
that's a thing. We've talked about this before. Michael Crichton described the thing. He called it the Gelman effect, which we know he was just talking to Murray Gelman about how when Michael Crichton would read something talking about the entertainment industry or Hollywood, he would know that it was inaccurate or whatever. And then Gelman said, yeah, the same thing for me, physics. When I read something in New York Times about physics and they get it wrong and they realize, well, maybe they're getting it all wrong. And once you have expertise in some area, you start to pick up and know this is wrong. And yeah. I'm going to tell you, as somebody who's been involved.
I feel that the most with something like Last Week Tonight or something, where you watch it and you're like, oh, that's interesting and informative. And then you see an episode about something you know about and you're like, oh, good Lord.
Yeah, I this is a case that's been for me and AI. And I watch this and then I realize that, holy cow, like the people talking the loudest know the least. And I hear people get excited over things that aren't worth getting excited over. And I've had friends go to me like, oh, what do you think about this? I said, you're hearing it from somebody who knows less than you do. You know, they know less than you do. So how much credibility do you want to give it? And so that's been kind of my big update on that has been that. So
just to button up the rumors around the big mathematical breakthrough, the stuff that has just found its way to me through listeners and social media and stuff like that, because I talk a lot about AI and was talking a lot about AI during the big board thing, is Harry Potter. Like it is absolute the fascination with AI has reached such a pitch that the concept of the mysterious bogan that's mixing around the servers of OpenAI could be anything. It could be, you know, it's just that the people's imaginations run wild with it. When as you pointed out, a lot of things are out there already and have been.
And I'll hear it too. Like I'll see a thing. It's like, oh, I heard a thing that so-and-so and this person, you know, he made this breakthrough, this. And I'm like, I know exactly what that person works on. And it has nothing to do with that. And that's just a name that you heard and somebody else heard and your fandom, you think this person has it. Like I can tell you, which I won't, but I can tell you like the super key people whose name, when I hear their names, I go, oh, okay. Now I'm paying attention. Cause I know it's like, no, this person's working on this thing, which is important, but that's not like, it's just, and I'm like, I can tell you, read the papers. I'd say read the published papers on stuff, and you can kind of figure out like really where the core,
who's moving things forward. And if you hear they're involved, that's something to pay attention to.
And there's also people who just every now and then come in every 2 years with something that then moves things really forward too. There are people they're doing like really. And so I'd say that it's just like the names that I go, oh, often I don't hear people mention them because they don't. They fixate on whoever the last person I heard somebody talk about. And people are some of the most important stuff is some of the boring, what would seem like boring. And one of the things I said this before, one of our researchers predicted the performance of GPT-4 before we started it. And he was able to predict how well it was going to perform based upon the amount of compute and stuff. And that that was a significant realization, was the ability to predict where it was going to end up at. And that's a thing that doesn't sound sexy, but that's extremely, that decides how you spend billions of dollars and direct all sorts of stuff. That kind of predictive capability is amazing. And we tried to tell people this and be like, it's going to be obvious. It's like, well, the fact that you think it's obvious is why this is important, because it's not. So here's the thing that Google's facing.
Yeah.
Is OpenAI is continuously improving what they're trying to do. OpenAI made GPT-3, and then we realized, hey, man, we made some mistakes. We could have improved this. We also know a lot more about how to improve the capabilities. Let's take the same kind of resources now, but let's redo it differently. And they made GPT-3.5, which was a huge boost. GPT-3.5 was a major boost. If they were any other company, they would have called it GPT-4. But they didn't, because they had an idea what GPT-4 benchmarks were supposed to be. And that was, to Sam's credit, whatever. Like, no, we'll call it 3.5, whatever. Okay. GPT-3.5 comes out. It's great. It's now powering ChatGPT. It's super useful for many people. Then OpenAI comes out with GPT-4, puts that out there. Then they've been working to improve this. You know, one is just the training, the fine tuning, whatever. At Dev Day, they announced GPT-4 Turbo preview release. Let me get the full name of it. But they announced, you know, the new model, which has got basically is faster, more updated, got a lot of, you know, and it's, you know, Sam promised at Dev Day that this thing was going to become faster, et cetera. So let me just pull up the docs on that.
And then so nothing interesting happened after Dev Day, and now we're here.
Yeah. So they announced the GPT-4 Turbo, which is a preview model. This thing can handle up to 128,000 tokens, right? And GPT-4 Vision Preview, which can handle 420,000 tokens. That means roughly 100,000 words. They're continuing to work to improve these things, okay? And the thing that Google is probably concerned and knows is that OpenAI knows a lot more now about how to build a better model after having done GPT-4. The amount of information they have post-GPT-4, looking where they are, looking at what they're doing, forgetting GPT-5,
yeah,
if there is going to be such a thing, is that if you look at the pattern, I'm looking at the model history on the, if you go onto the developer page and you just see, you know, following improvement after improvement from GPT-5, GPT-3.5 Turbo, you know, going to 16,000 tokens, you know, and then the original GPT-4 coming out, you know, then when it was 16 and it's the update, and it just keeps getting better and better now and better and better and better and better. And that's a thing that Google is very concerned about, is by the time they release, by the time Gemini Ultra comes out and it's actually generally available, you know, and I don't know what the evals are of the latest GPT-4 Turbo. I have no idea. I don't know what those evals are. They run the risk that OpenAI is going to have a model, and not a GPT-5 model, but just by their steady rate of improvement by what they're doing, that's going to be better. And that's, I think that scares Sundar.
Well, you know, and like you said, to create a model within the time frame that they had that got to the level that it is at now, from Google's perspective, is impressive. I don't think that 2024, based on all available evidence over the last 72 hours, is going to be led in the AI front by anybody but OpenAI for now. Like, I just don't have any information that would tell me otherwise when it comes to that. Because I think you're right. If you go by that cadence of three turbo, 3.5, then four turbos announced. So, you know, follow the leader. You don't need to be drawing a blue duck to figure out where this pattern goes. Then, yeah, you would imagine that there would be something else from OpenAI next year before you even get to five. So if that's the case, and we don't know when Gemini Ultra is going to come out, we don't know what its capabilities are going to be by the time that it comes out, because I imagine it will be a more refined and capable model. We don't know what the speed of it is. We don't know what their multimodal aspirations are or how close they are to it. But it would be an upset in my mind, and I think this is a conservative language, it would be an upset if by the time that New Year's Eve 2024 comes around, that anybody but OpenAI is leading this field. But it is a fast moving industry.
Yeah, I think the thing that's sort of telling is we are 3 weeks away from the end of 2023. And as of yet, there is no other publicly available by me, by AP Access, whatever model that is GPT-4 equivalent from anybody.
Yeah.
And all Google's been able to do is to show a thing. I think, I don't know. I'm very curious to know when Gemini Ultra is going to find its way into Bard or an API, because like I said, I think there may be a lot of issues there that prevent that, which is if that happens in March, that they're fully a year behind in the release. Now, I think they're going to fast follows. Let me make that clear too. It's like, there will be fast follows. I think that Google will have their Gemini Ultra is not going to be the only story they get to tell in 2024.
No,
you know, they're going to do this. And Sam Altman likes to say, like, well, for every move you make, they get to make a move too.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And that's why, you know, OpenAI is not, you know, Sam's very diplomatic about this, you know, whatever. And it's like, yeah, you know, Google should be commended for what they did and the effort the teams made, whatever. And we'll see. But I do feel like 2024, things are going to get crazy.
I mean, look, it is an explosive acceleration. It is a tech story. Unlike, you know, the reason why when we had this conversation about the board stuff, that was fascinating is because we haven't seen tech companies like this explode. We haven't seen a new element of tech explode in the way that AI has. You know, I think you sent me a tweet from the one and only MC Hammer. Please, Hammer, don't hurt him. Who was saying, you know, saying AI is fantastic. And it's so important that it, in a lot of ways, it saved the Bay Area. It saved elements of San Francisco. It saved elements of Oakland. That you are in a crunch for VC money, in a crunch because of interest rates for creation of new industry. AI is the ascendant field, and it came at a very, very crucial time for the entirety of not only that physical ecosystem, but the tech ecosystem, the global tech ecosystem writ large. There's a lot of things that are going to change. There's a lot of things that are going to get better because of that. So it is moving tremendously fast. My thing, and this is only following reports, I don't know exactly what's going on inside of Google right now, but you have heard consistently that there is managerial strangling of products. There is hierarchies on hierarchies on hierarchies that consistently put a wet blanket on things moving at a speed and ability that they should be able to do. It's reminiscent of other companies that got very, very big. In my mind, Google and Microsoft are two companies that the longer that they both exist, the more you can kind of look at them and compare certain elements. But the reason why I said on DTNS that I would not write off leadership changes there is because that's been the case for nearly 10 years now. And we're at a point now where Google does have to be propulsive. They do have to be explosive. They do have to push the limit on something that they have every advantage to do. And thus far, not only do they not do it, but I think they embarrassed themselves this week.
So here's from Bloomberg. This actually came out yesterday. Bloomberg, because after this started to make rounds about what's going on. And so I'm going to quote from Bloomberg article on this. One Googler told Bloomberg that in their view, the video paints an unrealistic picture of how easy it is to coax impressive results out of Gemini. Another staffer said they weren't too surprised by the demo because they're used to some level of marketing hype and how the company public positions products. Of course, all companies do. I take exception to that. I'm like, tell me where I, because I'm the guy that did this for GPT-4. Tell me what I overhyped. Tell me what I faked. Yeah. Tell me what I misrepresented there. Like that's my call out right now. If you want to say that we're the same, I disagree with that vehemently. Okay. And I could say, you know, there, and maybe I made mistakes, maybe, but like, I'm like, if you're telling me that we all do that, prove it. Okay. Sorry. I'm going to email Bloomberg right now. Can you tell me where I did this with this? Cause this is an insult to me.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
I think, man, this is my rep, man.
I know. But you can email them after the show. Let's get to the end of the show first.
You're understating how emotional I am right now.
I am not. I believe.
Let me continue.
Yes, I believe
were fired. I will not back down. I think most employees who played with an LLM technology know to take all this with a grain of salt. So the employee referring to the acronym for large language models, they asked not to be identified. From a Google statement, our hands-on with Gemini demo shows real outputs from Gemini. We created the demo by capturing footage in order to test Gemini's capabilities on a wide range of challenges. Then we prompted Gemini using still images from footage and prompted via text. So yes, you carefully selected still images from the video and then prompted the text. So you didn't give it a video and you didn't talk to it. Okay, so we can establish that video is completely fake. Bloomberg says, to its credit, Google did disclose what's shown in the video is not exactly how Gemini works in practice. Understatement. For the purpose of this demo, latency is reduced and Gemini's outputs have been shortened for brevity. You also extracted images from a video to provide it to it, and you didn't do the thing. That's a deceptive thing. In other words, the video shows a shorter version of Gemini's rote response, and AI system took longer to come up with them. Google told Bloomberg that individual words in Gemini's responses were not changed, and the voiceover captured excerpts from actual text prompted of Gemini. There is some question about that because sometimes it says something that doesn't seem like it had enough information to know what was being asked.
Well, there was something in the paper. Part of that video is it creating a game. And I believe in the paper, they explained that they gave it more parameters on what the game should be. It wasn't just what was said.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's not true, apparently, that what they said.
Because in the video, the voice just says, which again, they weren't talking to it. And it wasn't video. It was screen grabs from video. Yeah. Here's a map. Make a game. Use emojis. And then it just makes a country game.
Eli Collins, vice president of product at Google DeepMind, told Bloomberg the duck drawing demo was still a research level capability, not in Google's actual products, at least for now. Okay, so it was a magical presentation, something that doesn't exist. So moving down, Internally, some Googlers have been discussing whether showing the video without a prominent disclosure could be misleading to the public. In a corporate company-wide forum, one Googler shared a meme implying the duck video was deceptively edited. Another meme showed a cartoon of Homer Simpson proudly standing upright in his underwear with the caption, Gemini demo prompts. It was a contrast with less flattering picture of Homer in the same position behind with his loose skin bunched up. The caption read, the real prompts. As I said, the Google has incredibly capable people, really, really frustrating for them. And I feel for them right now because they've worked hard and now they're getting their name tarnished by the people at Google who decided to make this fakery where, and Google had today, they announced Google Notebooks LM, which sounds like it could be an amazing tool for work and stuff. Like there's so much cool stuff coming out of there.
Yeah.
And they just did this shortcut and it just undermined the people at Google, you know, working on this stuff. So I feel bad. I just feel like it's just, and it's like, I put it on Google Management. I also put it on the media. The media should have been asking more critical questions, but they didn't. And it's just like, well, the nerds are saying this thing and they had to wait for it to get enough momentum to go, oh, okay, maybe there's something here.
Well, I'm sure that there will be more in the future, but certainly something that I know we found incredibly interesting over the past 72 hours, including how it played out and our reaction to it immediately, the initial hype cycle through the media, which I will say part of the reason why Google gets the benefit of the doubt is because Google's Google. Now, and I don't mean that Google has the reputation, because we haven't even brought this up, but they are also the authors of the most deceptive demo of all time with Google Glass, which presented an entire falsehood that was not the reality of what they were creating. So they have earned a skeptical reputation there, but they're also a gigantic, massive tech company that no journalist wants to be blackballed from for being unduly harsh with something as serious as this. But it also shows you how much all these outlets that are covering it now, including Bloomberg, have to have this buttoned up to run with something in the way that they have. They have to have all those sources that you read from internal communications to run with this, because they don't want to be looked at as being unduly unfair.
Yeah. But it's just part of it's laziness, though. Like, the thing that frustrates me is a lot of it's just ask a question, go do a thing, but they wait for signal from somebody else to do it. Then they decide it's a story. But these are big things. And we'll get the lazy ones. Like so many, there was an article that came out like about, oh, OpenAI employees were pressured to sign the statement of support. I'm like, no, like I don't, maybe they found one or two people, but to a person that I've known, none of them that I know. And also the fact that like how many people just eagerly rush to sign it, but that's not the narrative they want, because they can't understand it too. Like I found that, like, you know, when you dealing with a very unique organization and you've never been in an org like that, it can be very confusing to try to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And you have to put it into other things. I watch people who want to paint. I've heard people like, well, you know, Sam Altman, you know, what about that other Sam too? And I'm Sam Bankman. Okay. Like, well, GPT-4 works. Like GPT-4 yeah. works. If you're even thinking and contextualizing him in the context of that other person, you're stupid. You're an idiot. Like literally, because it's like one guy built a complete house of cards that never worked, never did the thing that was supposed to do. Another guy's built a thing called GPT-4. And if you're here's something like, well, they got the same first name. Maybe it's like, no, like go over to the kiddie table.
Glue sniffing.
It's like, and listen, like, and not to say by all means, criticize, point out flaws, do that. That is a thing. But if you're media and your only sort of thing is this very dumb analogy because you don't understand the subject, it's like, I'm sorry, that's just not, that's lazy, and it just doesn't help anybody.
All right, well, obviously
we need to talk about Sam taking all the Diet Cokes. We need to talk about the whole Diet
Coke.
There
we go. Okay. The real crimes. Yeah. We will obviously keep our eye on AI and everything that comes in and around it. But until next time, Maine, you got any picks?
Man, I've been watching Doom Patrol and really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Good Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Good. I think I might have done. I did that on Corkos. Fargo. I watched the first episode of the new season of Fargo. Oh boy, do I love Fargo. You know,
oh boy.
The reviews came out and they're like, you know, it's not groundbreaking, but if you like Fargo, you'll really enjoy it. And I'm like, I could not rush fast enough to hit play if that's the review, because I don't want Fargo to be anything other than a noir crime drama set in states with funny accents where people have hidden motives and hidden pasts. That's exactly what I want. I want exactly that. And through the first episode that I saw, oh, beautiful, perfect, loved it.
Yep. Awesome.
Well, what has it been, Maine?
It's been weird.